So we're going to discuss right now the first of five different lessons related to dating. It's important for me to state that this is my own opinion. This is not necessarily something that necessarily everyone would agree on. And obviously, it's important to have people, when you start dating or when you're involved in a relationship, to ask people for advice. Advice comes, meaning for a person might ask for advice like when they should start dating, if they are not sure if they like someone, if they're not sure this person is marriageable material, like what to do about certain circumstances. And different people have different thoughts on these things. So over here, the first idea I want to talk about is about revisiting previous relationships. This could mean, it could mean anything as you dated someone in high school, you broke up for a year or two, whatever maybe, and wondering whether you want to date them again. It could mean, in my case, it happened many times. Just so you know, I probably dated somewhere around like 100 girls. And some of them, it was one date. Some of them was a few months. Like that's the range. But there were people who I ended up going out with, let's say for a few dates, then I broke up with them or they broke up with me. And then a few months later or a year later or 2 years later, decided to give it another try. I've actually had with at least two people where I've dated, or three people I can think of right now, where I've dated three different times, like three different rounds. It's like went out, broke up, went out, broke up, went out. And none of those ended up necessarily working out, but I want to discuss like something that I thought of that I think's important, because a lot of times when you're in a relationship and it ends, so inevitably you will be heartbroken, usually heartbroken to a certain extent. It could be just like a little bit, like, you know, I miss it. It was a long relationship. Like I thought at a time I was getting married to that person. It could be something like that, or it could be something even more intense. And one of the things that I realized, I'll just share my personal experience. This is not necessarily like, I don't know if everyone has this experience, but I knew about myself that when I dated someone and it didn't work out, and we dated for a decent amount of time, and I thought about going out with that person again, maybe a month later or a year later, I almost always only remembered the good things. In life, sometimes we get like, certain things are colored. And I don't want to say it's where I blacked out the bad stuff, but obviously, why am I thinking about going out with this person again? Why would someone think about that? Because you dated usually a number of other people and they weren't that person. And it's like, oh, I miss these component X and Y. Let's say a person, like, I miss their sense of humor. That's such a good sense of humor. Or this person was more attractive than those other people, whatever it may be. There may be, but like that's why you're thinking about it, because there's something that whoever you've dated since, that person does not have. And for myself, I know that I almost only reflected on the positive things they had, and it was harder to reflect on why it actually ended. Why, if I was the one to break up, why I broke up with them. And inevitably what happened, not always, but it would happen where maybe I went out with them on round two, and then it would end, whether a week later, a month later, however long, for the same reason, round one ended. And here's what I think it should, this is my advice. My advice is that if there's nothing that changed between you and that person, and I'll give examples to elaborate, but if nothing changed between you and that person, and it's just like you're thinking about whether to go out with them again, it's probably better not to. If it ended for like a valid reason. But if there's something that did change, a circumstance that did change, then it is something that, you know, could be revisited. So to plug that into examples, let's say you are 22 and you're dating and you're at college and, you know, break up and 6 months later you think about dating that person again. So odds are nothing really changed. Everything is the same in life. But to give some other examples where if you were in high school and you were dating and now it's post-Israel, and or if you didn't go to Israel, wherever it may be, just it's been a few years have passed and you're more mature and she's more mature, you're in a different place of life, then something did change. You know, maybe it is worth it. One can revisit that relationship. Or another scenario could be that things were maybe stressful in the relationship because you were in like a very intense grad school program at the time, or you were in the middle of finals and like you couldn't really give it time. And then you decide, you know, like when a year later, when the opportunity for that person comes around, like you're able to actually be present in the relationship. I actually once, when I was going to revisit a relationship, I actually was supposed to date someone else, I remember. And I knew once I decided that I want to revisit that past relationship, I knew I couldn't go out with the girl I was supposed to go out with. And I felt terrible about it, but I told the shach and the person who set us up, like, I can't go out with her. Like, because I know that I want to revisit this past relationship. And once I got that in my mind, then I had to do that. So that's the idea. Now, a Torah idea that I think it's not, obviously it's not literal, but I think it's a good idea to use as an analogy to this is the halacha is actually a halacha. It's based on psukim in the Torah in Parshas Ki Tetzé about divorce. That what happens when two people get divorced, and what if they decide they want to get back together? So it's an interesting question. It doesn't come up so often, but it does come up. And the Torah tells us that they are allowed to get remarried, meaning a couple gets divorced, those same people, if they want to get remarried, they're allowed to get remarried as long as they did not marry someone else in between. So if he gets married to someone else and then wants to get back together with his first wife, he's not allowed, if he gets divorced on the second wife, obviously, then he's not allowed to do that. Or if they get divorced and she gets remarried, then she gets divorced and they want to get back together, so they're not allowed to do that. It has to be where neither of them got remarried. It happens to be on a interesting note. The Sforno says, what's the reason for the halacha? He says, because what might happen is a person might, he says it's not adultery, but similar to adultery. You don't want the guy, I could be either way obviously, but a guy who, let's say, has a desire for a woman, and he says, oh, I'm going to divorce my wife, I'm going to marry this other woman, be with her, and maybe a week later, to get divorced from her and go back to the first wife. He says, we don't want a situation like that happening. So once you get divorced from your wife, and you marry someone else, you cannot go back to your original wife. But I think this is a good analogy, because what we see is that nothing, like here in this situation, when there's something different, something different happens, is actually kind of like the opposite of what I was saying, but just a similar idea that like whether there's something in between or not, whether that person got remarried, whether you could go back to them or not, but it's just a way of like thinking about revisiting previous relationships. The second lesson is something that's very important, and I'll tell you that almost all the lessons in this year and in the series in general are mostly based on thoughts I have reflecting upon dating. This one is something where I actually gained more knowledge, and I'll be able to share with you how and why. I gained more knowledge on this now that I'm married. And the topic for this one is, does profession matter? Does your profession matter? Really, it's thinking about not just who, a lot of times we focus on like, what should you do? But this is focusing on thinking about what that person you're dating does. Does that make a difference? So if a guy is going to date a woman who's a social worker versus a woman who's a doctor, or a girl dating a guy who is, I could use the exact same example, a guy who's a social worker or a guy who's a doctor, or a guy who's a rabbi, a guy who's in chinuch. So I thought about this and broke it down in the following ways. When it comes to our decision to choose what we want to do, and I'm sure some of you don't necessarily know right now what you want to do professionally. So it comes down to, I think, three different elements to think about the following. One is, what are you interested or good at? So obviously people gravitate towards wanting to spend their job and their whole professional career doing something that they have some sort of passion in or something they feel they're good at. The second thing is, it comes down to being committed and a commitment. And sometimes people won't do a profession because there's a long commitment. To go to medical school is a long time. I don't want to do that. I'd rather do this. I don't want to necessarily go to get a PsyD and spend 4 or 5 years in grad school. I'd rather go to social work where I could do a similar thing. So sometimes people choose professions by commitment. And certainly a motivation. The last is a motivation for money. And people want to, some people care more about money, some people care less about money. Obviously, everyone wants money, but it's a question of how much a person is going to make. And that's what we think about, I think, often when it comes to us deciding what we want to do. But when it comes to thinking about a partner, about a marriage partner, it is also three things, but I think it's three very different things, or it's thinking about it in a different way. I'll start with the overlap. The overlap is money. I will tell you that I was turned down by multiple girls because I was in chinuch. I don't necessarily fault them for it, but there were a number of girls who I said yes to, I was interested in dating, and they wouldn't want to go out with me because I was in chinuch. And that pretty much means, like, when you get that answer, like I've got that answer a number of times, it means because you will not be making so much money. They want to date someone who's more of a professional, let's say. Sometimes, like the opposite side, is sometimes someone wants to date someone because they're a doctor and because they are making money. I will tell you, I'll admit to you, like when I dated girls who had, let's say, more ambitious, stronger professions, so that money component was enticing to me. Maybe it was more enticing to me to date them because of the fact that I knew I was in chinuch. So it was like, if we're both in chinuch, might not work out so well. We're going to live in a small little apartment for the rest of our lives. But like, obviously, you can make it in chinuch. Look at the Mintzes, for example. But it does challenge things. It was something that I thought of. I've never said no to someone because of that, to date someone. So that's the first thing to look at. The next two are the bigger chidushim that people might not necessarily think about. The first one is a lifestyle. I'm going to use a more extreme example, but this applies in a lot of different scenarios. A lifestyle, for example, of, let's say, a Chabad shaliach. So for you who are on a secular college campus, you see the Chabad shaliach, and you see his life. And he and likely his Rebbetzin are in there as well. And they spend just 24/7 constantly devoted to everyone there. So you'll see more of the college campus. I live in a community and I see the Chabad of the community, and like, he does amazing things, but it's a very specific lifestyle. And to marry into that is something that a person really should consider, right? It's not just like, oh, how much does someone who's starting working at Chabad make? But what is the lifestyle going to be like? Obviously some shluchim move to the middle of nowhere. And this type of thing regarding lifestyle, like I said, I used an extreme example, but let's say I'll apply it to doctors. There was a person who I lived with in the apartment before I had my house, and it happens to be they met in medical school, husband and wife, and then they went somewhere for like his residency, then they went somewhere for her residency, and now they just moved to Florida for her fellowship. And it's like, people don't necessarily, when they're dating, they don't necessarily think about those types of lifestyle commitments of moving places and doing these things where it is important to think about. I'm not saying a person has to end a relationship because of this, but it's important just to realize, think multiple steps ahead in this. And the last thing, and this is probably the most important, when I said that there's something that I learned more since I've been married, it's this example, which is time. Oftentimes, we think much more about profession, about if the person likes it, how much money they're making. Like I said, maybe the lifestyle that comes with it, but the time and the availability is something that is so underestimated. And the reason it's underestimated is because of one of two reasons. Either it's not thought of when you're dating, because sometimes you don't even start the profession then. Or B, you'll think about like, oh, so when I'm married to this person, so it'll be like X. They'll have this amount of time available. But we don't often take the next step, which is, what is it going to be like when we have children? And it is important to realize that for the average couple, hopefully the average healthy couple that's able to have kids when they choose to have and they want to have kids, but might have a child within 3 years, 4 years, and then you will be raising kids in your house for approximately, if you think about, let's just say the oldest youngest will be about 10 years, a 10-year gap, and let's just say that they're at the house at 18, right? So you're talking about like 28 years of kids in your house. Okay, it's a long time, right? So you'll get married, a few years, maybe no kids, and then 28 years, whatever it may be, of kids in the house. And time is something that is so, so important. Just in my personal life, my wife is a pharmacist, and the way pharmacists work is that they have to work on weekends. So her non-Jewish coworkers, they alternate between working weekends, and one will work Saturday and Sunday, and then they're off the next weekend. Then the following week, Saturday, Sunday, then they're off the following week. Because my wife is a firm Jew, so she works every single Sunday. That's like her deal, which means that every single Sunday, including yesterday, I watch my kids. My wife, her schedule right now on Sunday is 7 to 3:30. Because of Corona, oftentimes she works from home, but she's able to. I don't want to go into the details of what she does. But she's not just like giving out prescriptions to people. But yesterday she went in, she left the house at 6 a.m. She came back after 4:30, and I was with my kids all day. And basically that's like every Sunday, even when she is home, I'm the one watching my kids. Now, I'm not saying it's annoying, it's challenging. Like, it definitely is challenging to be the like a solo parent for like my one like off day for Sundays. But it's something that I certainly did not think of when my wife and I were dating. Like I said, it's not about whether you will or will not end a relationship because of it, but it is an important component. It is something that maybe with a lot of pieces put together, maybe it is something that a person will reflect on and say, you know, I don't know if this is right for me. Let me discuss this with someone. That's what's important to realize. I was just at we hosted people for a Shabbos meal, and a number of the wives there said that they kind of like almost regret the professions they chose, because one of them said that she feels like she's a mother half the time and doing her job half the time, and doing the job like only like 50% like devoted to the job and 50% devoted to her motherhood. And she has four kids, and she's like, I'm thinking about like leaving my job, like being a stay-at-home mom, because it's just too hard. And it's just important to think about that timepiece. It's also like I said, for some of you may not have chosen professions yet of what you want to do. It is important to think about that, and to think about whether it is something that you think is best in terms of family life. Obviously, there are many, many women that work, and everything is realistically doable. But everything also comes with a sacrifice. So oftentimes, the people that make the most money are the people that actually have the least time available. It's like my friends who are lawyers, like they work crazy late hours, and the wife is home by herself, like putting the kids to sleep and doing everything. I get home at like 5:30, and I help till bedtime, and it's just a different feeling. So a person's time is very valuable and very important. And the Torah that I want to share with you, this is actually, I don't know if I'll read the whole letter, but this is a letter that the Rambam wrote in 1199 to his friend Samuel ibn Tibon, and he actually translated the Mor Nevuchim. And I want to just read to you, I'm going to read to you, obviously, this translation of the Rambam's letter, but I want to read to you the translation of it just so that you could realize, like, the Rambam being a very, very busy person. At this time, he was the physician to basically the head of Egypt, and was a person who came home and had people that wanted to speak to him about Torah guidance and about halacha, and he himself wanted to accomplish things. And he says as follows. So the beginning of the letter talks about how, in theory, they wanted to get together, the Rambam and Shlomo ibn Tibon. So he says as follows. Now Hashem knows that in order to write this to you, I have escaped to a secluded spot where people will not think to find me. Sometimes leaning for support against the wall, sometimes lying down on account of my excessive weakness, for I have grown old and feeble. So in order to write this, he has to get away from people, right? Like, that's how busy he is. With regard to your wish to come here to me, I cannot but say how greatly your visit would delight me, for I truly long to commune with you. and would anticipate our meeting with even greater joy than you. Yet, I must advise you not to expose yourself to the perils of the voyage, for beyond seeing me and my doing all I could to honor you, you would not derive any advantage from your visit. Do not expect to be able to confer with me on any scientific subject, for even 1 hour, either by day or by night, for the following is my daily occupation. So Rambam's basically telling him, I know you want to come, and trust me, he says, I really, really want to see you. It would give me so much pleasure, and I want to talk to you, but I'm not, he says, I'm not even exaggerating. I don't think I could give you an hour of my time if you came. Just not worth it. He says, I dwell in Fostat, and the Sultan resides in Cairo. These two places are about 1.5 miles apart. He says, my duties to the Sultan are very heavy. I'm obliged to visit him every day early in the morning. And when he or any of his children or any of the inmates of his harem are indisposed, I dare not quit, leave Cairo, but must stay during the greater part of the day in the palace. It also frequently happens that one or two of the royal officers fall sick and I must attend to their healing. Hence, as a rule, I repair to Cairo very early in the day, and even if nothing unusual happens, I don't return back to his house until the afternoon. Then I'm almost dying with hunger. I find the antechamber filled with people. It's like his house. People are just waiting for him at his house. Both Jews and non-Jews, nobles and common people, meaning the Rambam, you have to realize, was famous not just amongst Jews, but just as a general physician. Judges and bailiffs, friends and foes, a mixed multitude who await the time of my return. I dismount from my animal, wash my hands, go forth to my patients, and entreat them to bear with me while I partake of some slight refreshment, the only meal I take in 24 hours. Okay, it's already pretty intense. Then I attend to my patients, write prescriptions for their various ailments. Patients go in and out until nightfall, and sometimes even, I solemnly assure you, until 2 hours or more into the night. I converse and prescribe for them while lying down from the sheer fatigue. So he's writing, he's talking to patients while lying down basically on a bed because he's so tired, he can't even stand or sit. And when night falls, I'm so exhausted I can scarcely speak. And the consequence of this, no Jew can have any private interview with me except on Shabbos. On that day, the whole congregation, or at least the majority of the members, come to me after Shacharis when I instruct them as to the proceedings during the whole week. We study together a little until the early afternoon when they depart. Some of them return and read with me at the afternoon service until Maariv. In this matter, I spend that day. I'm not going to go any further, but we see that the Rambam was extremely busy. And he's telling this person, like, I just don't have time for you. I don't have time for anything. I've personally heard stories of friends of mine who have dated, and sometimes they're in a situation like this where they're dating someone, and the person's like, they're trying to schedule a date, and it's like, I think I have a few hours, like, next Tuesday. I'll tell you probably, like, a wild story. I have a friend who worked, a former roommate of mine. Just background to the story is he was so busy at his job at J.P. Morgan Chase that he once came home from work as I was getting up to go to Kushner. Okay? Like, literally, he came home. And then he had, like, the craziest thing is he has a few hours at home to sleep and then he has to go back to work that same day. He was so busy at his job at J.P. Morgan, he ended up either switching teams, but, like, he's not in as crazy a position now. But he literally had to schedule dates in the lobby of his building. Right? Can you imagine going to, like, the guys just meeting him in the lobby because he could squeeze, like, an hour and a half for, like, a conversation. So that's what it is for some people. I've heard people, like, to make, like, partner in a law firm, right? So you have to, like, kill yourself for a number of years. And these are very difficult things. So that's lesson two. Lesson three is about seeing the person in many settings. On dates, of course, a lot of times you're in, like, a very calm, and not just calm, but, like, a selected setting. Like, the guy will usually pick, like, oh, let's go out for ice cream. Like, you're chilling there, you're sitting, you're having ice cream. Let's watch something. Whatever it is, let's go to a basketball game. And you see the person, and obviously conversation matters, and all the other things about how important it is, and compatibility, and chemistry, and attractiveness, all those, that comes out there, and that's where you learn plenty about a person. But there's so much that a person could really gain by seeing someone in different settings. And when it comes to this, I break it down into, like, two different ways. The first is settings in terms of people they're with. So one is to see a person the way they are and interact with their parents, with their siblings, with their friends. It's obviously, it's not always like a must where like a person can't get married unless you see them interact with their siblings or friends. It's not necessarily the case, obviously. But certainly it helps paint a bigger picture when someone does see them in a different light. And the next, this is much more important, not just who they're around, but you want to see them in different, I guess, emotional states. You want to see them sometimes, and obviously the more you're around them, the more this happens. If something bad happened, if they had a really rough day, if they failed the test or they got into a car accident, you want to see them, what happens when they get angry, right? Everyone's going to get angry, but I can almost guarantee you most people won't get angry when you go to 16 handles. Like, it's not the classic thing that'll happen. But it is important to see how someone acts when they're angry. And these interactions, it could do one of two things. Either it will raise a red flag if you see the person acting in a way that's inappropriate or something that, like, is a little concerning to you. Or it's actually going to solidify things. If you really like them, it's going to solidify things even more in your mind. So you're like, wow, like, so impressed the way you handled that. I know of a person who was once on a first date with a girl, and the cops pulled him over for running a red light. Now imagine, it was actually to the date, so they've been in the car, they've been together for about 20 minutes, and the cop pulls them over, and the person, they're now talking in the car, like, you have to wait once you get pulled over, you have to wait, I know from experience, you have to wait a certain amount of time for the cop to come in, right? Maybe it's 5 minutes until he'll get his car, because the cop has to make sure he knows who he's going to, so he looks up your license and makes sure he knows who it is. So the person is waiting there, and the person was very calm. And the cop came over, and the person's talking to the cop, and, you know, it's a regular conversation. And he says, I'm sorry, you know, it's honest about it, made the wrong, bad decision. Cop actually ended up giving the person just a warning. And the girl turned to the guy, and she said to him, did you set this up? Did you, like, set this up so that you look good? And the guy said, no, I didn't. I really didn't want that ticket. But, like, I could hear why she thought that, right? But it's important for that person to realize, like, oh, this is the way he acts in a situation that would freak people out or make people stressed and upset and angry, right? Think about the last time you got pulled over. Think about how you were, how you reacted. Imagine that happening on a first date with someone. So it's important to see a lot of different scenarios. The Torah idea I want to share with you for this is actually from this week's Parsha. It happens to be, it's my Bar Mitzvah Parsha as well this week, Chayei Sarah. And in Chayei Sarah, there's a certain trop, a certain tune that's sung that's extremely rare in the Torah. It's called a Shalsheles. Shalsheles is, it has like wavy, like almost look like lightning, like a lightning rod over the word, and it's like just to do. It's on the word Vayomar, and Vayomar Hashem Elokei Adonai. I'll say what it is, but it's like Vayomar. Okay, it's very unique. The other two times it comes up in Sefer Bereishis are in. It comes up in last week's parsha when Lot was deciding whether to leave Sodom or not. The angel said to him, "You have to leave right now. You have to leave all your possessions. You have to leave everything behind you. Come and I'll save your life." And it says that Lot basically, like, hesitated. And so there's a shalshalis there. It also comes up in Sefer Bereishis by Yosef. When Yosef was tempted to sleep with Eshes Potiphar. So Yosef, in that moment, there's a shalshalis because Chazal tells us that Yosef was deciding what to do. Meaning it wasn't just, meaning for Yosef to be Yosef at Tzaddik, it wasn't where there was no struggle. There was a real sincere struggle, and he overcame that struggle and ran out without being with her. So over here, the Torah tells us that Avraham sent Eliezer to go find a wife for Yitzchak, and Eliezer tells Hashem the following, and that's where the Shalshel comes in. Vayomar Hashem, he says, Hashem, Elokei Adonai Avraham, Hashem, the master of my of the God of my master Abraham, Hakreinal Fanai Hayom Vaseh Chesem Adonai Abraham. I call you today to do something good for my master Abraham. I'm standing here, basically as I by the well, and I see the women coming out to draw water. And it should be Hashem that the woman who comes out to offers me to drink, and also offers my camel to drink, it should be that woman who should be set aside to marry Yitzchak. So that's where the Shalshalos comes in, on the word Ve'omar, that he says to Hashem this thing. And you should know, when I think about this, I've never had an answer, an understanding to this. Because all the other explanations of the Shalshalos are, you're in a situation and you're not sure what to do. Lot is not sure whether to leave or not. Yosef is not sure whether to sleep with her or not. So over here, what's going on? What's the Shalshalos about? So I saw in Rabbi Jonathan Sachs's book, Covenant Conversation on this Parsha, so he quotes Rabbi Yosef Ibn Kaspi, who says the following idea. You know what he was thinking about as he said this? He was thinking, is this test good enough? All of Yitzchak's, I guess, everything that's on the line of him for his wife, for his future wife, is going to be this one test. Is that enough? Is that enough to see a person, to see them in a lot of different lights, to know if they're really a great person? The Gemara actually discusses and says that, you know, this wasn't a good thing for him to do, because maybe someone will come out who is not fit for Yitzchak, even though she did this thing, right? So sometimes a person could do something, and they could do a great action, but that doesn't necessarily mean that there are other things that a person should be taking into account. And that was his hesitation. That was Eliezer's uncertainty of whether this is good enough, and that's why the Shalshalos appears right over here when he's telling that to his he's telling this to Hashem. I want to discuss two more. So number four, interests. Is it important to have the same interests as the person you're going to marry, as the person you're dating? Now, it certainly makes dating more fun. That's for sure. I remember I used to go on, not all the time, but like I've dated a number of people where I take them to play ping pong. And only literally one time did I date a girl who was really good at ping pong. And it was fun. It was like an actual competitive thing. It wasn't just like, you know, like holding the paddle and like hitting it back and forth and like every other time like the person totally misses it. It was like actually like a legit game. We had fun. Sometimes, so you know, I'm musical. So if I'm dating someone who I know is also musical, so that's, it's something to bond over. On the flip side, I remember dating a girl, and I was asking her like what she enjoys doing, and she was saying how she likes the outdoors, she likes hiking, she likes camping. And in my mind, I'm like, I like sitting on a couch, you know, like not so much the outdoors as much. But is that great? Is that not great? So I think what it comes down to, I think when it comes to secular interests, I think like it's nice if that happens, but it's totally not a necessity. And sometimes it could even be like a person's thing. So let's say, for example, some of you know I play golf. So my wife doesn't play golf, and that's fine. And like, if I in the summer, suddenly I have a break, and I'll go play golf. And like, I don't need to do every activity with my wife. And my wife doesn't need to do every activity with me. And people could have different interests and different activities, and that's totally fine. Like I said, if certain things align, if both of you love going hiking, and both of you love playing certain things, games, like, that's great. I don't think it's a necessity, but something that is important are religious interests. And when it comes to religious interests, if people want to make sure that they want to invite people over for Shabbos, or that they want to make sure that they make sure to go to shul on Shabbos, or to learn and try to go to shir together, whatever it may be, to live a certain life on a certain religious level and have same religious goals, that is important. It doesn't have to be where it's exactly in line. I would say that even if someone doesn't have, let's say in my case, right? So I constantly want to like do things for students or whatever. So it doesn't have to be where my wife also has like students that she wants to connect with. But what does have to happen, it has to be like a total like understanding and flexibility to facilitate that. So it either should be where you're both doing something together. Like if you go back to the Chabad example, oftentimes the Chabad couple are that. They are a couple, right? And it's not just where like they'll have the male shliach and like he does everything. Like, you know, she doesn't do anything. She's just there. Usually she's with him as well in the same journey. But minimally it has to be where they like I said, help facilitate the other person's wish and also would want that. that's something that they think is a great thing that the other person is doing that. If it's something that's looked down upon, if it's where, you know, like, I kind of resent you leaving and or resent you, like, talking on the phone with these people you're trying to help, like, then that's not a good thing. That's not a good sign. It's just an important idea. The Torah idea for this is from the Chavetz Chaim. The Chavetz Chaim, Ala Torah, I saw on page 256, he says as follows. He asked the following very basic question. He says, why is it that there are so many different types of Jews? Right? There are Misnagdim, Hasidim, different groups of Hasidim. There's Jews that connect through Torah, Jews that connect more through Davening, Jews that connect more through Chesed, Jews that want to fight in the army. Right? There are many different types of Jews. Why did Hashem make it so that there are so many types of Jews? And he answers by saying that when you have an army is only going to be successful if it has different divisions, if it has an air force, if it has a navy, if it has foot soldiers, if it has tech people. If you have an army that's lacking any one of those components, that army is going to be destroyed very quickly, right? And he says, so too, Hashem needs it where every single role within Klal Yisrael is filled. That you'll have people who are learners and kovei itim. You have people who make sure to do chesed. You have people that are their tefillah is just unbelievable. People that do achnasos orchem. You have so many types of Jews, and every single one of them is needed. We're part of the army of Hashem, and so when it comes to finding a spouse, so it's kind of it's making sure you're in this journey with them together. And to, like I said, ideally to have similar goals together, and if not similar goals, to minimally at least want to help facilitate the other person's goal and be flexible for them to be able to achieve and accomplish that which they want to accomplish. And the last idea for tonight is more basic, but it's what should you feel? A lot of times when people are in relationships, they don't necessarily often know if they're really into it or not. We would think, like someone who doesn't know anything, you would think like, yeah, I mean, how could you not know? You either like it or you don't, right? But sometimes you actually aren't really so sure, or you know you like them, but like, I don't know if I want to marry them, right? And that's it's a very important thing. It's classic where like a person will have like a mental checkbox or a mental list of things that they're looking for, and the person could have checked off either all the things or a lot of the things, but is this the one? And it really, in the end of the day, it comes down to a feeling. In one of the previous lessons, I spoke about kind of how you have to take a leap, and you don't have to say, like, I know 100%, oh, of course, this is the person I'm going to marry. I think there could be a little bit of a leap, but it should be where there's a feeling of, I really care about this person. Like, I've never felt this way about someone else. And it's a very, very important thing for a person to have that feeling. To not have that feeling and to just say, you know, I really like that the person does this job. I really like it when I spend time with this person. But, you know, it's okay. Like, I don't really think about them that much, but like, I like hanging out with them. But, like, is it like a friend? Like, or is it more than that? And a person should ideally, of course, want it to be more. And oftentimes, honestly, a lot of relationships end because of that. And I happen to think it's a very legitimate reason to end a relationship because just like, I don't feel it. Like those words, I don't feel it. And sometimes that could come after a few dates. Sometimes that could come after a few months of like trying. Like I'm trying, I'm doing what I can. And you want to try to get that feeling and you have to really put an effort to try to get that feeling. But in the end of the day, there should be a certain feeling of care and that this person is different from other people that you know and other people that you care about. The lesson for this is also from this week's Parsha, about Abraham buying Me'arat HaMachpelah for the burial of Sarah, Imenu. And Rav Cheskel Freundlich points out, and he says that when it comes to marriage, so one of the ways to get married is Kesef. We do that when we give the person a wedding ring. That's to fulfill this. And so he says, why is it that the laws of marriage, to fulfill marriage through Kesef, is learnt out from the exchange between Avraham and Ephron? Ephron Achiti, Ephron who owns Me'arat HaMachpelah, basically, and Avraham who wants to buy it from him. So why do we learn it from this? So he answers as follows, a beautiful answer. He says that Ephron ended up charging him a lot of money. It was 400 zuz. And that was a crazy amount of money at the time. So you know what happened when Avram paid that 400 zuz? Ephron felt, I just got the best deal ever. This is working out for me really, really well. But you know what happened when Avraham paid and gave that 400 zuz? Avram thought, I just got the best deal ever. I just got a burial plot. I got my Ra'ad HaMachpelah in Hebron for not just my wife, but even for future generations. And Avram felt he got the best deal ever. And Rafan Lach says that a husband and wife should both feel that way about each other. Each of them looking at each other should feel, I have the best spouse in the world. I got the best partner. And it's an important thing. Like I said, it comes down to a feeling. It's not about like, I got the doctor or I got the person who's the most X or the most Y. But it really comes down to the feeling of feeling like you really, really just care about that person. And certainly goes beyond that. So here are just some of the important lessons. Obviously, if anyone wants to reach out to me, like on a private level and speak, I'm definitely happy to help whenever I can. I'll give my phone number, 201-543-9308. And hope you enjoyed.